Thanks for joining me today. It's Jenny Baxter here with you, and you're listening to Treasuring Mothers. Today on the show, I'm speaking with Melissa Lubke, who is an amazing woman, having three children, but some time ago had the horrible experience of her husband passing away when she was pregnant with her third child. Hello, Melissa. How are you today?
Hello, Jenny. I'm wonderful.
Well, that's good news. So just tell us a little bit about your story. What happened? That must have been so devastating for you.
Yeah, a bit of a shock. Yeah, we were on getting ready on a Sunday morning, and I was going to my church gathering, and he was following on the motorbike. It was only a short trip. And so unfortunately, my maternal instincts sort of kicked in, and I realised he wasn't following. Half an hour later, and I turned back, and lots of emergency vehicles, and I realised it was him. Mm. Come off his motorbike. But at first, I thought it was, you know, I've seen motorbike accidents before, and you know, he'll be all right. He'll just be out of action for a while, which will annoy him. But yeah, unfortunately, about 16 hours in the hospital, and they couldn't do much more. Yeah, so I had to say goodbye to him. And
was he conscious when you said goodbye?
Unfortunately, no. When I saw him, he was brain dead at that stage. So yep. He was warm, and he was connected to oxygen, so it was made it look like he was alive. So it made it much easier to say goodbye to him, I guess. And I had plenty of time with him, and yeah, couldn't stop sort of touching him. And my pastor at the time said, this is the, you know, you don't have to go, but there will be a time where you have to say goodbye. And and that was hard because the coroners had to come in and take photos and things. And I'm glad I had that time with him.
Yeah. So how many weeks pregnant were you then?
It worked out to be about 11 weeks. And when he had the accident, it was about 11 and a half weeks. So, yeah, very early on, we hadn't told anyone except for mum and dad. And unfortunately, we had to sort of announce to all our friends at our beautiful gathering at church saying, I'm also pregnant. You know, it was 12 weeks when I announced it to the papers, I guess.
Yeah. So this was New Year, or was it before New Year, or was it just...
He died January 4th.
Okay.
Yeah, so, around about that time.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, what a beginning of a year. How did the year unfold?
It was a big year.
Yeah.
So I knew I had to have this child in, you know, beautiful child in July, but we also had a farm. He'd just been establishing this. Well, we'd been there for about, since we married, so 7 years or so, and he'd just finished the big shed. He'd finished quite a lot of stuff, and we were almost ready to finish off one paddock to get some stock on and enter into this world that I didn't really understand, but he did. He had an agricultural background, but I was excited. You know, I wanted to really support my husband in this and walk with him and raise our children on this farm, and it was an exciting time, yeah, and it was building up and building up and building up. Mm. And so I thought, well, I don't know whether I can actually run a farm. Give birth to this child. My oldest child, who's 8 now, he's also diagnosed with ADHD and ASD, autistic spectrum disorder.
Okay.
So there's extra needs there. Mm. And we're going to a school closer into town, so it was about a 40-minute drive. And a lot of supports were there. I really had to just ask God and say, what do you want? I want to do the best I can for these boys and the way Andrew wanted me to raise them, but clearly knew that my skills were limited and my capacity to even manage other people to do it limited, plus my own grief, let alone the physical, you know, whether I was actually mentally able to take it on. I said, okay, well, if you want me to move from here, you know, show me the way. And first house that pops on, I type in the area that we needed and the size we needed. His house that he lived in when we were engaged, and he renovated afterwards. I just thought, wow, you know, is this the house? And it wasn't the house, but it definitely made me start looking, and got some people around me, some of his friends, to help me find the right place.
So how did you manage the whole grief thing? I mean, it must have been hard for the kids as well. What did you do?
Well, they were 4 and 6, and so the six-year-old, as I said, was on the spectrum, which we didn't really know at the time. I knew there was something up, but the fact that he didn't actually express his emotion was hard for me, because I, you know, Daddy was laying there in the ICU, and the boys came in, and the oldest one just looked at me and said, "Who's going to be our daddy now?" You know, and to sort of go, "Don't you want to say goodbye? Don't you want to?" You know, and the younger one, the 4-year-old, he didn't really want to confront it. You know, he wanted to go up and play in the kids' area. So it was kind of like, here I was in the middle going, I don't know whether I should be encouraging you to be sad or, so it was hard. So when that moment came, I had to be there and listen and not be in my own hurried world. My life slowed down so much that first month or two, and nothing really was important except for being there in the moment. It helped that I had family and friends cooking for me and cleaning and and things like that. So that really meant I could just switch off that practical stuff that weighs you down most days.
Yeah, from what I understand, children, they don't grieve like adults, and sometimes it's just too hard, and so they shut it off. And at some point later in life, it's a part that they process, but it happens in its own good time. And so, I've done quite a bit of research on that, having lost my mum when I was young. And it's interesting how people assume that kids will either forget or things will be all right, they manage, but actually it does surface at some point in the future. And possibly with your son who's on the autistic spectrum, who knows how it's going to...
I've been taught is that they do have all those feelings, they just don't express it the way we usually express.
Yeah,
so I'm very conscious. I think because I'm a creative person, and so is that child, I'm very conscious of how it might come out. And I've noticed sometimes he will dance at certain times, and that I least expect it. Or he will draw and he will talk his feelings by doing a drawing in his own little mind. And they were kind of like little pictograms, you know. You could ask, tell me more about it, but he probably won't tell you the way that you'd want to be told, you know. Great, I've learnt all about you now. He's just processing things in his own little way. I mean, even this morning, the youngest one, who is now six, said, I just miss him. And I said, yeah, I know, doll. And he said, do you want to go to his grave? And we'd be better off digging through photographs or wearing some of his clothes and things like that, because his spirit, you know, is what's important, and we know where that spirit is now, you know, and we've got that hope, you know, that we can be there with him one day. Yeah, so I'm very conscious. I'm taking the necessary steps when he's going to go to a venture therapist. He doesn't know that it's a therapist. I'm just saying, you want to go for a walk with a cool guy, then I just take you random places and just talk about the bush and stuff. And because I'm aware that there's that male role model that's needed as well.
Yeah.
Even though there's friends and family around, there's no one that they can really, apart from granddad, you know, but that's still different as well, to really snuggle into. And that's hard for me, because in this world, I need to find safe people as well. Oh, gosh, it's hard. Like, you want to open up your home to people to make sure that these role models are in their life, but you also need to know that they're safe, and that takes time. It's important to be around safe groups such as churches and things that are, you know, and you're having relationships with them regularly, know more about them, and even then, you know, we don't really know, but to be in other people's lives is so important. And that's what I'm sort of grieving as well. We don't have that. We don't have it as much, because no disrespect to people that I know, but when you're a couple and when you're a family, you do couple things and family things with other couples and families so much easier, because you just slot into that kind of...
The mums talk and the dads talk and the kids go off and play.
And now I don't think I've been really invited out to much places after church or places like that. And everyone has to make an effort, I know that. But you kind of... I'm starting to now have to start listing my single friends and say, let's make an effort to meet together, because we need each other. But also we're more aware that it's another world. I used to think of single mothers as, it's your own fault. Oh, you're in that situation because of your bad choices. That's so not true. Yes, there may be parts of that that's true, but it doesn't matter what circumstance got you there. The point is, we need to be
supporting each other. How else are you going to do that?
Yeah, exactly. And to find those good people takes time, like I was saying.
Well, Melissa, it's been great speaking with you today. It's certainly been an education and given us a lot to think about. Thanks, Melissa. Great to talk to
you. All right.
Okay. All right.
See ya.
To listen to this interview again, head to treasuringmothers.com and you can look for Melissa Lubke. This is Jenny Baxter saying goodbye for now.
That's this week's episode of Treasuring Mothers. Don't forget to join us next week. Thank you for listening.